Welcome to The First Turn. I'm your host, Hyena, and today, Laman and I are talking about This Week in Warhammer. If you like what you hear, give us a like, comment, subscribe, or share, or let us know if there's something you'd like to hear us talk about. All right, let's get to it.
So, welcome to The First Turn. I'm Hyena.
I'm Llama.
And this week, we have a little bit of info from Games Workshop about a little bit of things. Specifically, we've got, the constant stream of things for AOS 4.0, which is, as you might have guessed, exciting to us.
Exciting. A little bit.
It is...
A little bit.
Shaping up to be a very good-looking rule set.
Yep.
Today, they showed off what their small-scale skirmishy version of AOS is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Back when they first announced 4.0, they talked about this modular rules thing, concept, where these different sections of rules can be omitted or included depending on the format. We have Spearhead being shown off now,
yep.
Which uses very few of the modules, and as such they have... units with their own war scrolls that have some of that stuff taken into account, but it's not fully implemented, right?
Yep.
So we've seen that with one of their wizards that they had showed off. There's a spell that they have on their war scroll that would normally be part of the army's spell lore that you get access to, but instead of having those spell lores and whatever available, instead it's just this unit now has this ability.
Yep.
And you can just cast this spell.
Yeah, and they have their own version of battle tactics, yep. and whatever, because it says Spearhead will not use the advanced rules modules, and we haven't figured out what all those look like yet.
So instead, there is an objective pack that you'll be drawing out of a deck to see what your objectives are for Spearhead. I don't mind that just as a thing, though. Like, I think the deck is kind of cool in most games. You're not choosing the most optimal objective for yourself every time.
Right.
You actually have to play to the whims of chance a little bit more. I really like the idea of doing that. In 40K, they do that with their deck. You can either have two static objectives or random objectives every turn.
Yep. I've seen the tournament players do both.
Yeah. I feel like having static objectives in this game's case where you choose one at the beginning of your turn every turn, you can set yourself up on just a guaranteed win path too often. Like, I don't like the idea that you know the order of which five objectives you're going to do in your turns, because you could choose five that were non-interactive. And you could just get max points on secondaries off of that. I don't know.
So there it is, mm-hmm. The non-interactive part. Yeah. There are some people who can, I'm sure maybe not at the highest levels, but there are people who probably get free wins based on, I'm just doing this turns 1 through 5. I don't really care what my opponent's doing.
Right.
I know in turn 1 I can score this one. On turn 2 I can do this and score this thing.
There was a monster, might have been an orcs, I can't remember who it was, where it was like, okay, well, turn 1, I run with 3 units.
Yep.
I get my objective. Turn 2, I use my battle tomes, run with 3 units that are monsters. Accomplished. Free points.
Yep.
I'm going to use this secondary, have models in all 4 quarters of the battlefield and not in combat. There's my free points.
Yep.
It's just like, these aren't interactive abilities. These aren't interactive stratagems or, you know, tactics that you're generating. Like, you win off of just doing stuff around the board without actually interacting with your opponent.
Right.
Not a fan of that.
Yeah, you sent anywhere from 3 to 6 units,
mm-hmm.
Like StarCraft style when you're probing, where you just sent them to the different corners, mm-hmm. and then you just scored max points 3 turns in a row.
Yeah. Not a huge fan. So hopefully that they change a little bit of that. I'm assuming what we saw in the actual article where they gave some examples of what the objectives are going to look like,
mm-hmm.
We'll actually see some of these same ones.
I
wonder if some of these exact ones even are in the secondaries pack that we'll get for the full AOS. Because they're nothing crazy. Right? So the two we saw were if any friendly units within 3 inches of each short battle edge, you know, are on the battlefield, you get it. So it's spreading out and getting the short battle edge control. You get the win. Okay, that's fine. You have battle tactic Dracothian dais, which is if you have any control any of the Dracothian objectives at the end of your turn, you get it. Well, we don't know what that means necessarily.
We don't know, yeah.
But it's like, okay.
Well, objective-based ones,
your secondary is you'll get a specific objective, fine.
Yep.
And like we saw that all through, like, 8th edition with that deck, right? It was, there was, what, half the deck was go control.
Maelstrom objectives.
This objective, go control. These two objectives, go control. You know, like, it was, I like being directed to go control objectives as secondaries,
well,
as
priorities. And I like a little bit of the whims of chance with the decks, so long as they don't put the ones in there that some armies will never be able to do. Like, they had that, they've kind of sorted that out now, right?
Yeah.
In 40K, you have some of that. But it used to have stuff like, you score this one if you cast this many psychic powers this turn, and then if you were Tau, Drukhari, or Necrons and you drew that, you're like, oh, nuts. I can't.
Because it was in their faction's deck, even.
Yep.
The specific deck for that faction, they put in six objectives that were specific to their faction, but you know what they didn't cut out? Card number 55, that was Manifest. It's like, you can't. Why is it then? Why isn't that one of the cards that was cut?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Frustrating.
But but thankfully there's not that. I love universal objectives or tactics or missions.
Yeah.
And we see, you're right, we do see it in other games where there's some element of like, well, what objective to get, and they draw it out of a little bag or they flip a card over or whatever, and that tells them what they have to do this turn.
Now, I do like the idea of this one, because again, we don't know if this is carrying over to the full game, because with this system they're doing for Spearhead is once you draw your objectives, you can use them one of two ways. Either you accomplish the objective that's on there, or you can use the attached tactic on it, the command ability on it, to gain a tactical advantage over your opponent instead of scoring points. So it's like, it creates a really interesting dynamic for like, especially a small game like this one.
And that's just it. So for people who haven't tried Age of Sigmar, this is a great way to get in, because it's literally the Spearhead boxes, which they'll all be repackaged and called Spearheads, that come out for the army. You only need that box to play. And so you're looking at $140-ish?
Yeah, but usually. Maybe $160, depending.
Yeah.
And
you're getting a small all-in-one army, and the games, from the sounds of it, from their playtesting, are just lightning quick.
Yeah.
It's like 45 to 60 minutes, and you get a full thing in. Which that's a really fun thing, especially for new players. I bet they'll even be able to run events that are that.
Yeah.
Spearhead event.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it might end up being tighter and more competitive even than the full
game.
It
could.
Just because it leaves out so much stuff. The balance is such that you don't have all these extra options that can make these combos.
Right.
You're
playing with what comes in the box.
Yeah.
Now, in my opinion, that makes it almost like Underworlds Plus.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a deck-building game, but you only play with the models in the box. I bet we'd see something like this. Well, no, that'd be a bigger effort. I was like, maybe they'll end up one of those flights at Gen Con where it's that we have it built for you and you just pay and play.
That'd be really fine.
That's a huge effort. And you'd be asking players to pay that much to enter.
Yeah.
But
all those boxes are pretty damn good, by the way.
Good value, too.
Good value and a good lineup of models.
Yeah.
Usually they use these boxes as an opportunity to push models that aren't in use or that are overproduced and underselling. The ones in these are definitely like core units for these armies that you should be playing.
And anyway, maybe that was done with that thought process they talked about, where they looked at units in similar categories across armies.
Yeah.
And like, how can we make those balanced?
Yep. So, I mean, yeah, like, I'm liking the look of this so far. We see five additional vanguards, because there's three that exist already. I'm sorry. I apologize. Spearheads.
Yeah.
Used to be called vanguards. There's three spearheads that exist already, and there's five more here, and they showed them off. And they're solid.
Yeah.
I think the Disciple of Tzeentch ones might be one of the best, just because some of the models in there were hard to get a hold of, namely like the Flamers and the Magister on a disc. He only came in a starter box initially. I think that box is really, really good. The Darth Kane one's fine. It's all core units. Same probably goes for the Bone Reapers. The Lumineth one comes with just battle line units that you want anyway.
And they talked about that for some of the balance that they had the armies composed differently to feature different things or take advantage of different tactics. I'll be interested to see. Have they shown at all? Have they teased at all what the rest are going to look like?
No.
So we only know this so far.
Yep.
Okay.
These five, and the three exist one. There's a Stormcast one that we're
And some of the rosters just suffer from what we've talked about, where they just need to be expanded a bit.
Yeah.
Like Daughters of Cain see the same stuff in every box they get. They really need another couple units.
What else is there?
Yeah, they need a couple others. They need a couple new units. Yeah, they really
do. So, and like, all that looks great. They did show off in an article earlier this week what some of the data or the War Scrolls will look like for the Vanguard Spearhead.
Spearhead.
I'm never going to get
spearhead.
Over
that. It's Spearhead. It's Spearhead. It's Spearhead. A head of a spear.
A head of a spear? Yes. I guess in the article, though, we do see what the other boxes are going to look like.
Oh, it's right there in the banner. Yeah, okay. Banner.
So, I mean, again, some of the smaller armies don't have a wealth of options. And right. So you're going to see the same stuff no matter what. Look at Sylvaneth, for example. You know, if you're not playing, you know, putting Dryads in the box, what else is there? Well, there's Kurnoth Hunters. There's Kurnoth Hunters and there's Kurnoth Hunters. There's a Tree Lord, you know, and then there's the Revenants. And so all three of those are in there. You've got 5 Spite Revenants. You've got 3 Kurnoth Hunters and 1 Tree Lord. Well, I will not need that box. I've got plenty of that because that's in what's in every single box. Mm-hmm. I've got like 7 or 8 Tree Lords.
Yeah, they didn't put any of the flyers or anything.
Three
in
of which,
the new, like...
Yeah, 3 of which are unassembled. I don't need more Tree Lords. I don't need more Kurnoth Hunters. So, like, that kind of box is a little bit too much of the same, you know.
Yeah.
But if that's what it's balanced around, then that's fine.
And if you have a new player.
Yeah. The, let's say, like, the Seraphon one, though... is really juicy. I want everything in there. 3 more Crocs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please. 10 more of the new Saurus Warriors. Mm-hmm. And then another Carnosaur. It's like, yeah, I'll probably take one of those. So, yeah, it's...
Now, I wonder if for that spearhead, you have to play it as a Carnosaur and not build it as the other one?
Yes. That's...
Okay.
Generally, yeah. What it shows Wizzywig, on the box is... I mean, WYSIWYG-ish, because they said that the spearhead units don't have things, which are advanced rules, by the way.
Oh, right,
they don't
right.
have things like magic. They don't have things like command units. So there's no champion in the unit. There's
right.
no banner.
There's probably no war gear swap in or whatever.
Yeah, none of that. And so, but they said that you still want to build them with those command models in the unit, even though they don't have rules for this mode, because they will need those command models if you take them into the other
proper
game.
AOS, yeah.
Yeah, so they did specifically say that. The Stormcast one, by the way, probably the least useful because it has a Yndrasta in it. And with her ability and her box, she and her unit of Annihilators can't come in until turn 3.
Mm-hmm.
So like you have to deal with having half of your army off the board for half the game. Because she is such a powerful, you know, entity, that's the balancing things. Well, she comes in late.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah,
like,
you have to survive until you have to Alamo. Rough. That army has to Alamo until yeah. she shows up. Yeah,
exactly. Which I think is funny. That's a funny way to balance it out. And then the cities one is just solid too. Knights, Cavalier, Marshal, Cannon, Steel Helms. No gunners, you know, no hand gunners or anything like that. But it does have a cannon.
So yeah. No. That's fine. So it's interesting. Is I got to say of all their sub modes because. Both Warhammer 40K and Age of Sigmar, they always have sub modes or alternate game modes, and they try to push them, but they're usually I don't know, they're usually like a role playing session where whoever's playing can just kind of make up the rules and you can whatever.
Right.
This is a legitimate alternate game mode.
Yeah.
I think that they've tried.
And like I said, I mean they've put effort into making the War Scrolls complete. Right, like
and different.
You don't have to reference, and you don't have to reference rules elsewhere. They've got everything relevant on the sheet, but it also uses a lot of the same rules and mechanics and everything that come from the core rules anyway. And so this wasn't necessarily a lot more effort.
No, because the same core rules work in every mode.
Yeah.
It's just which modules
just
they get.
Stuff. So I really like it. I like that they designed multiple game modes. We haven't seen a third game mode that uses a different set of advanced rules yet, though. Because like this one was, you know, 3 of the 10 modules are used in this one. And then every other game mode besides this one uses all of them. So there's not like a middle one between this and the big game. So, but we did see a little bit of some new sheets. Specifically, we saw the Magister, the one on the disc, who's got the weird, like, especially the one from... what's the game? The AOS game that just came out. The one that kind of flopped. The RTS.
No,
Realms of Ruin.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a Magister in that one who's kind of bird-like, kind of double personality. I don't know if you've gotten there yet in that game.
Nope.
You play a little bit with this character who's trying to ascend. This model that they have for the Magister is that character. So like you'll see this character specifically. But like this is what we were talking about with the only ability it has is the spell that it would get from a spell war. There's literally no other rules on that. It's very, very simplified. to make the game quicker and easier and simpler. But we had seen the Clan Rats for Skaven. And they, while the rules were not actually showed, on a scroll, they told us what the Clan Rats will have in AOS compared to this one. All the Clan Rats do in this one, with their horrible fighting stats, hit 4, wound 5, woof.
Yep.
All they do is come back to life. In this game mode, all Clan Rats are 4 are resurgence. They just, they're units that just hold an objective or whatever. They come back to life. They really do no damage.
Nope.
However, when it comes to the ones in AOS proper, Clan Rats will have an ability that they showed off in the previous weeks with their critical effects. They have criticals auto wound. So a critical hit of 6 means that you don't make the wound roll when they're 5 up. It automatically goes through. That's actually pretty damn powerful. Yep. That's really strong, actually. And so I think we're going to see a little bit of the divergence of what they had in terms of design and mentality for units. Because Clan Rats just having wounds that just auto go through is a huge buff for a unit like that. Even though the wounding stat is so bad, you're going to get a lot of like saves being forced just from rolling 6s to hit.
Yep.
It's pretty
by volume.
It's pretty cool. Because I personally wasn't sure what they were going to do with Clan Rats to make them different, if at all, from their previous iteration. That is really neat.
Well, and we can think about that for a second because we've seen so few war scrolls for the new AOS and so few army rules, if any, that if the Clan Rats already look different than the previous iteration, maybe they really did spend most of third edition working on this stuff. Working on how to make the units different. And that could be where we see a lot of stuff come from. Because we hear that chatter when a new Codex or Battle Tome's coming out, people will see a leak of one unit and then still think all the other units are going to do exactly the same thing. And so the power level comparison they're making or whatever, the combo they're hoping to come up with is just wrong. Well, this might be game-wide.
Yeah. But you and I are able to detach from that, right?
Yep.
We don't play a huge amount of games.
No.
And you and I are able to like, not to, we can see a bigger picture.
Yep.
When we look at this stuff, because that's how we look at things and we analyze things that way. And that's just how we are. And so like when you have a new edition like this coming out and all you have as a reference is the current rules, it's kind of hard to prevent yourself from looking at these rules and seeing how they integrate into the current ones.
Yep.
Assuming everything stays the same and all the rules in this edition stay the same, how does this work in that one? Well, there better be this many points. It's like, well, you and I take a step back and say, we have no idea what this is in relative power level to anything else besides the other comparable war score data sheets that have been showed.
And I know we've said this before, but that's also why it's hard for either of us to... When the first chatter for something that is shown, people will say it's a buff or a nerf.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't know what this is relative to anything else yet. And if you're thinking, maybe in relative, if you only compared that in a vacuum to its previous edition version and took nothing else in either context, sure. But that's not how it's going to go. So, it's just all the good things. And this spearhead mode is one of the coolest alternate modes I've seen.
It's definitely the most thought out, I think. Alternate modes of
play. I think it's a way to get a lot of people into a lot of different armies, even if it's just a small amount.
Yeah. So, I mean, I already have a small amount of a lot of armies. I can play this for days.
Yep.
So I'm really pumped about that.
Although, they did eat up a couple of days this week on Spearhead. I do want to see more of the proper stuff, but...
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they have planned out their release schedule to make it straight up through July. Like this isn't just like, well, what are we going to release today? They're cooking something up in the morning. It's like, what do you want to release today? Write an article about Spearhead. It's like, no. This stuff is prepped and ready to go. There's release.
They got a little dry erase board
They've already planned it out. They maybe aren't even uploading these things manually. They've got this locked in somewhere.
Sure.
It's like, trickle this out at this date on this time, this article goes out.
Yeah.
And it's already set and ready to go. It's like an auto upload sort of deal.
And it seems like a long time for prep, but it's... And even then, we've seen they still don't show everything until it's time.
Right.
But this is a way also for them to fill a lot of time.
Yeah.
They still have to show off their other products during the week.
Absolutely.
And they still have to show off these other game modes.
Yeah.
So
we did also see earlier this week, the other little drip of information we got was about endless spells.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things Again, it's hilarious because we talk about some of these things, and it's eerie how close we are to being right sometimes. Not, again, not tooting horns or whatever, but we'd always said, it doesn't make any sense to me that things like endless spells, invocations, that sometimes look like monsters, look like creatures, are like just a spell, and you cast a spell, and sometimes they resolve their effect immediately, then they go away. Look at the burning head of the burning head endless spell. You summon it, you set it up, it moves, it gets in range of an enemy unit, it explodes, and you remove the model. Why did I have that model?
Right.
You could have just said, it has this much range, this is the effect.
Yep.
So what they've done with invocations and endless spells and even the incarnates that they showed off, the one that we have so far, is now they have given them actual war scrolls that have stats on them and wounds and save characteristics to be able to destroy them with weapons. They were talking about how they wanted spell lores to be picked during list creation, and all your wizards get access to them. Well, you also get access to a list at list creation of different manifestations, and they showed off what those kind of look like, and they showed off the universal manifestation of forbidden power. So your Horrorgast, which is the Nagash head endless spell, and the Soul Seeker guy that ferries your units across the battlefield.
The Davy Jones,
and the Soul Scream bridge that was abused for all kinds of different things. That's all in one spell lore. You've got the conjuration, the death magic conjurations, the Grave Tide and the Purple Sun. Or one lore. You've got the time matter, summoning metal things, your cogs and your silver swords, all those. And then there's primal energy, which is the Emerald Lifestorm, the gnashing jaws, the burning head. These are all lores that you'll get, and I'm sure they've attempted at least to try to balance out these lores against one another. So it's like you've got one really powerful spell in the lore, but then a couple other weaker spells.
Or utility spells. Right. And I think the importance of something like this, is that also prevents you from just cherry picking three of the best ones from everywhere. It's right. Like, now maybe they'll come out and they won't be balanced and one will just be obviously the lore you take.
It could be.
But I'm going to wager certain armies and or casters will only have access to certain ones.
See, that I don't know.
Or do you think they're all going to be universal?
I don't know. I think there will be lore spells that you'll get from your army. And so only certain casters can use those ones. Like, think about the Stormcast, right? You have the Comet and the little hovering pedestal that a guy can summon and beyond. I think that will take place of one of these spell lores. Mm. But instead of getting your own, you could take a universal one. I think every wizard will have access to one of these. Every army will have access to the universal
But it'll be one, right. I'm sure, and that's
one.
It.
Unless there's a way to get another one, perhaps. Maybe there's an enhancement or you pay points or some kind of mechanic to balance the fact that you get access to another manifestation lore. Because think about how they do it in the game right now. You can take a specific detachment, you can get one extra enhancement. Well, one of those enhancements might be spell lore. You get access to more spells. So instead of starting off just like your one spell you get for your army, you might be able to get a second spell lore as some kind of balancing mechanic, some kind of upgrade or some other mechanic to get more spells.
Maybe.
That's a big maybe.
Yeah, I only question it because these spells are free now.
Yes.
And so,
because that was the other thing, is they are free. So you are really penalized if you do not bring a wizard. Bring a wizard.
You got to bring a wizard or a priest who can do the things. Yeah.
I assume that they are somewhat balanced against one another in terms of model selections, spell selections. Because again, they are 0 points. So we'll see how that goes over. The other one that they did show off in terms of just the actual war scroll was the Quicksilver Swords, which we've always loved. The Quicksilver Swords, it's always been pretty good, mostly because it always had an ability that when it did mortal wounds, you couldn't save with ward saves. So it was like, something's got a really, really tough because it's got a ward save. These silver swords slip right through there. Now, it just has straight up attacks. It moves. It's got a save characteristic. It's got wounds or health. It can charge, and then it fights with its attack profile, and its ability is critical hit mortal wounds. Mm-hmm. So it can still do its mortals, and then its special rule is they ignore ward saves on that. But it's like, now it's actually a thing that fights, and you can like attack it back and kill it, as opposed to like, well, I don't have a wizard or a priest. This thing just runs rampant all over me.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm glad that they did this. I think that's solid. So now you might summon your Molten Infernal, whatever, for the dwarves, And then it's just a beast that runs over there and starts fighting now. Instead of it just being like, I have a thing that just now spews molten lava across the battlefield as a shooting attack.
Which means there are a little glow worm and Sylmaneth will do that.
Absolutely.
And so it'll finally be just a monster.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you know what this also reminds me of? Mm-hmm. Is in that little game that didn't get anywhere and never has anything new ever, Arena Rex. Mm-hmm. So these are the lion. This is the disaster in the arena type thing.
Yeah.
So they gave it the same kind of stat cards your units have.
Yep.
And functions based on, interaction, proximity to other units. That is a simplification. Yep. Instead of trying to create a whole new set of rules for it, make it function like everything else.
Yeah. And if a prismatic palisade gets in your way and you can't unbind it, now you can just smash it.
Yep.
You know, I love it. They extend it even further, though. It's not just endless spells and stuff that do that. Even though there are some endless spells that are stationary that mm-hmm. act basically as terrain, a wall, or whatever that gets in your way. But terrain features now also have stats and are destroyable.
Yep.
Not just through a monster's rampage, a monster gets close and just smashes the rubble with a single die roll for free. Now you can actually shoot it. You can actually like run up and attack it, which makes it so that there's also some tactical stuff there, right? Like if you deep strike in with a unit, you can't get in range to attack archers or something. Well, maybe you attack, you charge in and fight the terrain feature that's next to them, and you can pile into them and tie them up. You know, like now yep. the terrain feature doesn't just get in the way. Now it's an actual charge target. That
right.
You know, that's a little like that's a little scary. You
yeah. Think about well, it's that. Very it's a very new concept yep. for them.
Yeah. But I love it. I think it's super duper cool.
And they made it really with the exception of the spell that's designed to be exactly a wall. They also made it so. Like, there aren't really shenanigans with these. You, mm-hmm. you don't get to, like, summon them to charge block and do stuff like that. A lot of units just get to ignore it so long as they don't end a move on it.
Yeah, so they clarify, like, how the manifestations work.
Mm-hmm.
You can move through the manifestation, but you can't end on it, similar to normal things. You can finish a charge move within a half of it. So I assume that means you can't move within the 3 inches either and, like, end within the three.
Right.
Because then you would technically be in engagement with it.
I imagine it counts as a unit.
Or maybe you can. I don't know. You can damage and destroy them, but they don't count as a destroyed unit for any kind of right. battle tactics or anything, because you're banishing magic with swords instead of a spell cast. And then they are also introducing this this keyword called core for abilities that interact in some kind of way. We don't really know what core is yet, other than we've heard it referenced a few times. So the manifestation can only use core abilities. So I assume that's not stuff from your faction's
right,
abilities,
right,
things
right,
like
right.
that. Maybe it's only like specific stuff. They cannot use or be affected by command abilities, which is probably good. You should be able to command a...
Yeah, funny thing is these seem like so... duh kind of thing, but I'm glad they still spelled it out anyway, because yeah. you know there would have been moments right off the bat where people tried to give it a faction ability,
yeah.
cast a thing on it, issue a command to it, use it to move block mm-hmm. stuff. They would have done all of those things. Players would have.
Now, I think it still does get in the way, because you know a lot of these spells have footprints that literally you cannot place your own models on.
No, but you can move through them, but I think yeah. there is still a tactic
yes.
to putting it there and forcing them to do something about
correct.
It.
And then we had the new Prosecutor show off, which I think is the best Stormcast they showed off so far.
Yup.
But they have a thing for the Ruination Chamber as a reaction for being a Ruination model. They have a once per turn ability. If you've got the Ruination keyword, you can resist, make a resistance roll, which they haven't defined what that is. But,
no.
but I assume it's just basically a save against an ability's effect. For any Ruination model... you can shrug off non-core abilities. So the manifestations can only be affected by core, but these Ruination models have a special thing against non-core abilities that on a 4-up just ignore it. So whatever a non-core ability is, they've got resistance to it. That might be spells, that might be chants or prayers, that might be, if you charge in, the enemy does mortal wounds back to you. That's a non-core ability. You might be able to shrug that off. You know, like a counterattack sort of non-core ability they can ignore on a 4-up. Something. You know, like there's lots of things that could be and lots of
yep.
things that could mean. We just don't know yet. But it makes me excited. Like there's so many cool like mechanics that they're introducing for this that.
And while I get that some of this is unavoidable, that when they're trying to show us stuff, they accidentally show us other things they're not ready to tell us about.
Right.
It's also a nice way for them to Easter egg and make you interested. Like, wait a minute, what's that keyword mean? What's that bold word mean?
Or just
to
allude to the fact that there's more.
Yeah.
Like, we showed you what this was called. We didn't tell you what it is yet.
Nope.
You can speculate all you want. We'll probably extrapolate some accurate guesses.
Yep.
Right? But we don't know exactly.
I know that once it comes to the gameplay, it's still going to feel like Age of Sigmar.
Yep.
But this is just shaping up to be just a tight, really thoughtful approach to the rules so far. So that's what's most exciting, because it is the game we kind of have a squishy spot for.
Yeah. We also got a rules download too for the Dark Oath that are coming out. Should be this weekend.
Yep.
And again, I don't know if we've talked about it on here. We've talked about it between us multiple times. Not a standalone army.
Don't
think of it as such.
Right.
It is literally an addition to the Slaves of Darkness army.
Yep.
There is some synergies that happen within them between the Dark Oath models that I think incentivizes you to bring more Dark Oath.
To bring a module of them at least.
Exactly. They're not good on their own because it's four unit choices.
It's four unit choices, you know, like, and they're all like t-shirt saves.
Yeah. I mean, guess there's technically eight currently. You've got, in addition to the four that just came out, you have the War Queen model.
Yep.
It was a Dark Oath. You have the War Chief on foot, Chieftain, who's a Dark Oath.
Yep.
You have an Underworld's Warband, who are technically in the game for another year, and viable. And then you have the Warcry Warband.
The Savagers.
The Savagers, who are going to have different rules from the Dark Oath.
And they're still going to be valid. Yeah.
And they will be valid, going forward. Whereas the Underworld one, Black Wings something, it's like four models. One with like the wooden predator mask.
They have a name that doesn't seem Dark Oathy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Darkwing Ducks. I don't know what it is. that warband is a Dark Oath unit that will be valid for a while.
Yeah.
So with those eight units, it's still not an army. But those are all Dark Oath that take advantage of the synergies of being Dark Oath. And I'm sure there'll be something else coming out eventually down the line. But the units rules came out and they are exactly kind of what we expect.
Yep.
The points came out and they might be a touch too expensive for what they do.
For right now.
I mean, we're okay with I think three of the four that just came out.
Yep.
In terms of point values. They're fine. Maybe the horsemen are a little too expensive. Maybe the
They also do, however, serve a function like I guess the slaves don't really have. I think the Wilderfiend's a little expensive. I just think that because he needs a minute to get going.
Yeah.
But I think the points were a little probably just half-hearted because we're not going to receive a balance pass before this edition's over.
Right.
And they know what these have been written to look like. They've known about this set for probably a year or more.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the rules written for 4.0 is what I'm going
to
imagine.
They have to. Everything's done for 4.0.
Because some of these rules aren't even going to matter like in the next one.
Okay.
So, and the War Scrolls aren't even going to look the same. So I'm not worried about it at all. We did talk about last week how other sites gave it a review and they were kind of like super unfair in their description of what they expect them to do. And some things like even their weapon type where one has reach, it's like, that's not going to matter.
It's irrelevant.
And another of their buffs is like bravery based and that's not going to matter.
Yep, absolutely.
It'll all look pretty different, I'm sure. I think they're still okay.
Ninth unit. The character one that's coming out in the next book, which also hasn't come out, by the way. The last installment of the campaign, the sixth part, that where you've got Abraxia, the new ever-chosen lieutenant.
Yep.
Vanguard, ever-chosen lieutenant.
Yep.
Model, like the half-dragon. There's a warband for Dark Oath of five models coming out with that, too. So it'll be another Dark Oath unit. Really weird how quickly that is going to be released and then fourth will drop.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like nothing in that book will be relevant.
Rules-wise,
at all. I mean, story-wise, absolutely. But
sure.
But they'll print rules for the units for three.
They will.
Maybe they'll include 4.0 rules in there, too. Maybe that book will come out at the same time as 4.0 to launch it. And it'll have the new rules, the new format in there.
Why not have a campaign carryover? You know, and because I tell you what, they have had a streak of doing that in both game systems, where some little campaign narrative driven thing will come out alongside new models and there'll be new rules. And it's like, this is so cool. I get like 2 months to play with it, though, and then it's going to be different.
Yeah. Well, Vashtor was that.
Yep.
He came at the end of some campaign and then it was like, okay.
8th edition, they did a whole bunch of books. And end of one of the AOS editions, they did. Like, the end of Fantasy, they always do this stuff where there's a bunch of campaign books that release cool models and cool rules, and then it's like, oh, wait, that's now immediately.
Yeah. Last edition in 40K, it was actual 2 battle tomes had a lifespan of 3 months before the new edition came out.
World Leaders, Astra Militarum.
Completely invalidated them. Yeah, that was unfortunate. We have a buddy who plays those 2 armies. And
yeah.
They got them in the last 3 months, and then they were just gone. It's almost like, don't even buy the books at that point, because it's like,
yeah, buy the models if they're cool, don't buy the book.
Yeah. Like, so that harkens back to just the whole digital thing, which I think maybe they're getting the idea of, because we had new 40K books come out, and they've said immediately, like, well, the points that are printed in the book that you're getting are already invalid. We're telling you that ahead of time. There'll be a PDF that's coming out alongside online that will update those points. And it's like, okay, don't print them next time.
Right.
Just do the PDF alongside the book.
And they did say for AOS, there's not going to be points printed alongside the indexes. Right. Like, it's just going to be an online.
But that makes me wonder if the battle tomes will have points. I know. Okay. And I'm sure they will. But it's like, you have the chance right now.
The launch of this game.
Just make a change.
Yep.
Take a look in the mirror. Got to make that change.
Yep. Just King of Pop it. Like, they could take the loss on whatever battle tomes have been printed, and just like, we're gonna go digital, guys.
Yeah.
We'll print cards for you whenever units update. Packs of cards for the factions, and you can buy those packs of cards for what are obviously too expensive. But we're gonna start doing it just through the app, so everybody's points and rules are updated.
Again, I still don't mind doing, if you want to unlock the army's rules, having a code you buy, having a pamphlet you buy with a QR in it, whatever, a code you punch in to unlock the rules in the app, that's fine. But the points need to be free and freely updated.
Yep.
The data sheets need to be accessible to everyone so you can actually see them. When you're fighting against an opponent and you don't own the army, you need to be able to see their rules. Maybe not their artifacts and their army rules and stuff like that, but at least the stats with of the units.
Every single tabletop game offers that.
Yeah. So, like, that's a thing. Make a short, small pamphlet to unlock the rules in the app. The app exists for a reason.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's functional.
And it works. And it's actually really good for both games.
It is really good.
Like, both of the apps are solid.
Yep.
They've got functions of each one that I like and I don't like, that I wish they would bring the things from each one that I like together. The 40K app has a much better format for when you build an army, importing those units into a very easy to read roster that includes, like, at the bottom of it, you can see all your stratagems and they're broken down by phase, what you got, your artifacts are defined in there. Like, it has a very solid army builder in terms of look. I like that a lot, but you can't see any of it if you don't own the book. That's a problem to me.
Yep.
Parts of each I like. Going forward, though, I hope they realize that, and because it'll allow them to focus more on the things we like from Games Workshop, which is the models, right? And not worry about trying to spend all this production time and money and trying to sell us on books. You know, like, I want to buy models from you. I don't want to buy books from you.
And,
you
know, and I know there's it has to be chatter going on with them because enough people are talking about it. And we've seen that when there's chatter about stuff, eventually Games Workshop starts to make it happen.
Sure.
This one might just be you've got enough people there who are still holdovers for how things used to be.
Yeah.
And they've been developing the app pretty much in-house. Mm-hmm. And so they might just not feel like they're in a comfortable spot where they could get that stuff going that quick. So maybe we're going to sit through one more edition of each game.
I mean, definitely seems like there's changes going on.
Yeah.
Though. I mean, the AOS layouts and rules writing is clearly written by someone who knows how to write rules.
That's what it looks like.
You know, it's like that's someone within didn't just have an epiphany and figure it out. They must have brought someone else in.
Yeah, because what
like
what,
a real rules.
Because what it doesn't feel like now, I know they have some of the guys who've been there since the beginning
for sure.
but it, what it doesn't feel like is it's not just someone who's writing the stories and drawing the pictures and then saying, well, if this were a game, let's do it in theory. You're right. This, what this feels like is the play testing was perhaps a little more rigorous, and they brought in even game designers who only do that, who like, and it, and because so far everything we've seen in AOS, this is like, when I keep saying the word clean or tight for the rules, it's because they're not being vague about whatever they show. Whatever they show is like, here it is. And then when you're looking at it, it's like, I can't find a loophole in that yet. Like, I can't find instantly how I would break that.
I can't see any ambiguity in this.
Right. And even when they're over-explaining things that should be a duh on the noggin, it's like, well, I'm glad they did, because then you're going to have those people when it's not there who find a way to do that, at least at one event before they have to make an announcement.
Yeah, but what if I want to use this? Oh, no, no. It says exactly what phase, once per turn for your army, not for like, it's like, oh, once, okay, yep, you've covered all That's your grounds. I can't.
I wish I could use it every turn, but you know what? But I'm glad it says, here's when I can use it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and so like, I'm hopeful. Very, very hopeful.
Yeah, I would just, that's one more push that I would love to see that I think would do right by the people, is to, once you get it digital, you're not shackled to the pitfalls of what these books mean.
Yeah. Just, it's just so funny. Color-coded.
Yeah.
In the header, once per turn, parentheses, army, for your entire army, once per turn, not once per turn, unit.
Right.
Because, like, there again, there's room to clarify different things.
Yep.
Once per turn, this unit can do this.
Right.
Once per turn, this army can do this. What is it? It's a reaction. So you know it happens at a certain phase, a certain part of the phase.
Right.
What does it do? This unit was picked as a target of a non-core ability. When? Here's the criteria. Here's how often you can do it. Here's the time you can do it. This is so clear.
Yeah, and
here's the effect.
And while obviously we don't yet know everything about reactions or core abilities, the fact that it tells you this is once per turn army means if you have... You can't have five of those units all then doing it.
Right.
You get once your army can do this thing once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once per turn, and one unit in your entire army that
with
has
this ability can
use
do
it.
This thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or this right or this keyword or whatever.
Yeah.
So so clean. I love it.
Yep.
I've actually been working on getting some stuff ready for this edition.
I thought I was, but I've gotten a single chosen piece.
Well, you got hamstrung by just the assembly this time around.
Yep.
You've
been doing a lot of it.
Let's call it a thorough assembler. A
little bit.
You like to clean up everything. You like to fill in every mold line and gap. You are very thorough when it comes to it. Even for models that you're not painting for competitions, whatever, you sand, you fill. And so a lot of the units you're putting together are ones of a lot of work to do because they've got so much detail.
The chaos stuff all
does. Because you're working on Slaves of Darkness. Mm-hmm. You're working on the Chaos Legionnaires.
Those are all assembled, but I have another box of Warriors I'm still, and another box of Knights I still have to do.
And you did the Chosen already.
Yep.
You did one box of Knights. You've got another one coming. You've done your Eternus, which I've seen some photos of you post that and getting them on Instagram. Check that out, by the way.
Yep.
And so that's the majority of what you have, right? You don't have any chariots you're doing yet?
I have two chariots, but I don't know what happened because I used them a lot in in AOS 1.0. I found them, but like the guys who were standing on them are missing and all the spike poles or banner poles or whatever are broken.
Just throw some Chosen on there.
Just waste Chosen and throw them on there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But I'll obviously want to have them usable if they're good. But I have two chariots.
Okay.
And then the second box of warriors, or the second 10, second five set of knights, and then it'll be all this Dark Oath stuff.
Yeah. And then I think you should have a new...
I have an Archeon, I have a Bellicor, I have a...
Exalted Hero?
An Exalted Hero.
Coming too. Okay.
Because that's the only character I think I don't have. I also have the... Underworld's named one, which even if that's no longer playable in the new Slaves,
I mean they're cool looking.
Like, I can still use
it's
any,
a sorcerer.
I can use a sorcerer. I can use one as a hero.
A new
I
champion,
can,
whatever. Yeah. Which I'm okay with that in terms of those Underworld warbands no longer being valid. They are just cool looking proxies or alternate models for some stuff.
Because even if they rotate them out of Underworlds, which I don't know if they are, I know some Warcry stuff's rotating. Underworlds is still its own game.
Yeah.
And while I hear great things, I don't really play it. So using those models in my slaves army. It's like, yep, these are cool champions just and sorcerers, and yep. I could put two of them on a chariot and, like, you know, whatever. With some blue tack.
Yeah. So super cool. Eternus
has been a fun one to...
But that's a big undertaking to take all at once.
Yep.
It's just, let me just assemble an entire army
at
the get-go. And then you got more Dark Oath coming. So there's that too. I luckily have gotten all of my Chaos stuff at least assembled, most of it primed, a lot of it painted already. Because I was running a mostly cultist
army. I have the guy on Karkadrak too.
Yeah.
And he's painted, actually.
Yeah. I've done a couple of tournaments, narrative events, Adepticons, where I'm running Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I'll bring my Dark Oath / cultist stuff because it's a fun aspect of an army that I really like for Chaos. Non-marked human mortals.
Yep.
And so I used a lot of the Warcry warbands for that. And so most of mine are painted and done.
Mm.
This last time I painted them all and didn't use them. I pivoted and brought an entirely different army, which is fine.
Well, but
I need to get them done anyway.
But at least you're going to have some assembly on your hands because you're going to get a whole bunch of new Skaven. Many new Skaven.
But it's not just that. So the Dark Oath is coming. The Abraxia edition. Don't forget about her.
Yeah.
That edition is coming. The Stormcast v. Skaven stuff.
You're going to get both of those.
I'm getting both of them because I have both of those armies. I have every army. Let's put that out there clearly.
Disclaimer.
I have them all, but these are the armies that I focus on, call it. So there's that coming. And then I kind of want to flesh out my Cities of Sigmar army more as well, which that will involve not only getting more of the new kits to flesh out some of those units, but I want to do some project hobby kit bashing to come up with some units that may not survive in the next edition. Who knows? Because that's always how it ends up being, by the way. As soon as I pick a project and say, I'm going to kit bash these units and make these work, they end up getting cut. Normally it's Forge World, right? Like when I was doing Skaven Wolf Rats, I made a bunch of my own out of the wild wargs from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So they were the right size kind of bodies. They could fit on the same ovals. So I made a bunch of like rat faces with rat, wrappings on their faces and ears and collars and tails and stuff with these wargs. And then immediately after I was like 80% done with the project. I hadn't painted them yet, but I was done kit bashing them all. The Skaven Wolf Rats got cut, got legends, and put on the shelf.
You know what you could still do, though? You could take, like, two of them and make a unnamed warlord that's just got, like, two of them on chains and just put them on a 50 or something, and there you go.
I could.
Now you could at least aesthetically still use them.
I'm not convinced that they won't actually bring back just wolf rats in general, though.
Mm.
That's what I'm holding my breath for. So maybe they'll actually come out with some wolf rat units for Skaven coming out, because we don't know what else is there yet.
Right, we don't know anything
but
beyond.
But if they do, I'm going to want to get those. So these ones, basically after I was done, I picked them all by a handful and just threw them in a box, and they're lost. I don't care anymore.
Right. Well, if the launch of Warhammer 40K 10th edition is anything to go by, what they show us first is just going to be the starter box fodder and not even everything that either army's getting.
Yep.
You know, because Marines and Tyranids both made out.
Because with Tyranids, after they had that starter box, we had all the extra skulkers, the extra the Death Leaper. You had the Lictor box. You had the
Neurolictor.
The
Norn Emissary.
The Norn Emissary.
The Biovore.
All that. Yeah. So it was tons of extra stuff in addition to what they showed in the starter box. But I also want to kit bash up some of the flagellants for Cities of Sigmar, because I think they are funny. And I think they're marginally good. The models are so old and god-awful.
Yeah.
I don't want to use the models. But I have some ideas to come up with some convincing
Make your own.
Flagellants. And I think that would work. Because I want to run a faith militant, call it, sort of army full of just witch hunters and the pious aspect of the Cities of Sigmar that don't use any of the actual armor or gunpowder. You'll just do like the Faith and Fury kind of angry dudes running at the army, the opponents.
Black Templars.
You've got witch hunters, killing demons and wizards and banishing endless spells and stuff like that. And I think there's enough of that kind of stuff in terms of like the leadership in Cities of Sigmar that they come out with through, war bands and underworlds and stuff like that, that you could have like the upper echelon of a witch hunter army filled out. But you would need the fodder to go with them. And I don't think Steel Helms and stuff like that are good good cannon fodder for those types of leaders. You need like the crazed, you know, dudes with no shirts on charging the opponents. Because those are the only ones that would charge, you know, headfirst into demons are the crazy ones. And then maybe some of like the Wolgercore hunters to go along with it to be, you know, sniffing out the corruption with dogs and, you know, pitchforks and stakes and kind of stuff. So I think that kind of an army would work to build it out. And like the base body that I'm coming up with is actually going to be from Necromunda. I think one of the warbands from Necromunda is tattered and crazy looking enough that you could be convinced that they are flagellants or Sins of Sigmar.
I have to say, like, that's an area where I don't know if I've ever excelled, because I end up thinking about how I want to paint something. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that I go around seeing, like on Instagram, where it's like they just kitbash the heck out of stuff, and then it looks great.
Sometimes you go too far. So, while I like the kitbash aspect myself, if I had to pick one thing about the hobby to do, you couldn't kitbash or you couldn't paint ever again, you had to choose one. I think I'd sacrifice painting to go with kitbashing. Because I think that aspect is really interesting to me. And I think a lot of people either who are good at kitbashing come up with, there's a middle ground, right? You either come up with something really cool and it's subtle and it's solid and it's convincing and you love it. But you can take it from there and either go too far with the kitbashing and make it like dumb.
Yep.
You went too far, this is stupid now. Or you are not a good painter and you paint it yourself and you ruin the great kitbash.
That sounds so, with a really so mean, bad, but,
it does.
But it happens.
But you see it happen where it's like, here's this project I'm following where they're coming up with this great, amazing kitbash. It's like, yes.
Super unique idea.
And then they put paint on it.
And then they're even like excellent sculptors.
Yes.
They'll not just mash parts together, but they'll do a green stuff thing or a milliput thing. And it's like, wow, that looks so sharp. And then they paint it and you're like, oh no.
Oh God.
What happened?
It's so globby. It's so... shiny, it's just it's so bad.
I don't know what happened.
I'm not naming anyone specifically because I can't think of anyone specific. No. I'm saying there are examples out there that I've seen where I've like face palmed because like you painted if you knew you weren't a good painter, find someone who is to paint this for you because
all the work you did looked so good.
I feel like you ruined it. Like woof.
Well it's a paint job they do where now you can't see the kitbash they did anymore. Like it gets lost because it was muddy.
Yeah. They're distracted by the bad paint job or the paint is literally so thick you cannot see the sculpted
part. It's super shiny, super thick, filled details, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Because when it was in its green, yellow, and gray stage, it looked so sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's just it. I think there's a lot of people who are in one camp or the other who can do one or the other. Mm-hmm. I always see the kitbash and like, oh, why didn't I think of that when I was building my insert army?
Yeah.
Because I always just think of putting them together normal. And
my normal mode for kitbashing is I can see a pose to have the model in. Using the existing pose, putting them in a position that would be striking on like a diorama or on a base or something. But I mean, some people are so creative that they take the base model and just take it so far and turn it into something completely different.
They think of parts from another kit and cut off a backwards leg and put it on there.
Like, I saw someone do a Chaos Sorcerer riding the new Ionis dragon, but the head or the neck and the head of that dragon were replaced with, I think it was like War Hydra.
Charybdis.
The Charybdis kit.
Yeah.
It's the same kit.
Yeah.
But it's got those extra like necks that come out from the centerpiece that was then sculpted to have like, you know, chaos infection. It was like split. There was exposed flesh. The wings, they tattered the wings up with Milliput and they drilled holes in it. And then it was two like chaos dragon cyclopean heads with like, I don't know, the tongue of a keeper of secrets or something. I don't know. It was wild. But it was like, wow, the fact that someone took that model and they saw that and how to do it is just so impressive to me.
And then some people are incredible in that conceptual stage. Yeah. They without even thinking about it, they'll sit down and they can draw that out. They can sketch it out and like know what parts to draw from.
Yeah.
And then they do it. And then you're right. I'm always nervous once it comes time to paint. Because it's weird. It's like it's like almost different brain style. It's like they think like an architect or something and not like...
But what you need is an engineer.
Right.
You know, like it's not...
Oh, yeah. They think like math and not like art. And then it's like you need somehow to...
Yeah. To bridge the two. I feel like as a team, if we did like entries, I don't even know if you're allowed to do that.
Right.
For like a golden demon, it's like, well, if I could,
they don't permit collaborative efforts as far as I know.
Right. But that's how I feel like we could do well as like a team, where it's like, well, I'll make the model, you paint it.
Right.
You know, and then be like, oh, this is an amazing entry. But it's like, I think what makes a lot of the, especially like the open entries and stuff like that, so impressive is it's one person does all of it.
Yep.
Right? It's like, okay, so you get with the idea, you execute the idea, and then you painted it phenomenally, you win. Mm-hmm. But if it was like a group of people doing it, it's like, well, this is a specialized sculptor, and this is a specialized painter.
This person specializes in the base.
Yeah.
And this person,
so it's like, okay, I get that that's not allowed, especially like Golden Demon or something, but... I don't think I could execute on the whole project myself, especially not in like a reasonable amount of time, you know, to get it entered into anything useful.
Right. I think most of the reason I don't ever sit down and sculpt is just for that. It's like knowing the time I would have to take to make sure the detail I'm doing looks correct. Mm-hmm. If I'm sculpting a part that just isn't on the model or that I can't find, it's like, well, I really want to put a cape on this guy, but I don't have one that fits in the way I want. So I'd have to make one, mm-hmm. and it'd have to have fur, and it'd have to have all the stuff that attaches, and it's like, eh.
The model looks close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Yeah, but it'd be like, if you could collaborate, then, I mean, I think that might set a bad precedent, so I get why they don't.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we don't know if someone's ever sculpted for someone else, but...
Sure. Absolutely true.
Right.
It could just be in the DL, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe say they have in the past. Because like I said, some of the projects, I'm not calling any out, but some projects are just like, man, it's so impressive that if one person did do all this, paint job and sculpting themselves, that is a talented individual.
Yeah.
Look at the Daniel Craig Space Marine. I mean, like, we know that guy. I forget who it was.
Kirill Kinia. He's from Russia.
Did it all himself.
Yep.
We know. There are records of him, like, here's how I did it.
Right.
Here's videos of me sculpting him. Here's videos of me painting it. Like, yes. Talented individual, because that model was amazing.
Yeah. Well, and he spent, that's one of those guys who did the, well, I started this in 2018 and just finished it this year.
Right.
Like, and because they're putting that level of, and they're doing other projects, but they're always coming back to it and tweaking it and then adjusting it for the times, or they're waiting to paint it until they know they can do it all in one go, so their style doesn't change. But yeah, otherwise, I suppose as a group, we could probably do a family style meal version where everybody takes from the same plate and then turns it into something. But
and maybe we would say, well, yes, this was not one person, we're going to into open. And maybe they would allow something
like
that.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. But like trying to pull like a fast one and like sneak in a model
right.
that was clearly like a group thing and winning a category, and especially if you win hardware on it,
yeah,
that would not feel right.
It'd feel bad.
You know? So, yeah. So don't do it.
Don't do it.
You know, like, there's a time and a place for, like, family style.
Right.
You know, collaboration. And that...
A potluck style.
And that time is either a picnic or like a family dinner.
Right.
You know, that's where you collaborate. You all pitch in.
Everybody brings something to the potluck.
Not something like this.
Right.
But speaking of which, I could eat.
Listening, we hope you enjoyed. Check out our new episodes every Friday on Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Audible, or on Podbean. You can also follow myself and Llama on Instagram for more. We are at Hyena Paints Minis and at Llama Paints Minis. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. And as always, we'll catch you next time.